guys, and welcome back for another episode of the Social Hour Podcast, a podcast for sewists by sewists. I'm your host, Ashley.
And I'm your host, Bethany. And on this week's episode, we're following up of last week's episode, with part two of YouTube. We had quite a few topics to discuss in our last one, and we realized it was going to be a really long podcast, and we didn't want to overwhelm you all with information. So we opted to break this up into two parts, which I think was smart on our part, because I'm looking at our talking points for today and I'm like, yeah, that would have been a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot to digest for sure.
It is. So I hope the last episode was helpful for anyone interested in learning more about starting a YouTube channel, specifically one that is crafting or sewing related. But this kind of applies to any kind of YouTube channel that some of the information that we're sharing. So I'm excited to finish this topic up because there are things in here that you and I have talked about and I've learned from you. And so I think we just kind of dive right in. So if you didn't catch last week's episode, I would pause and go back and watch or listen to last week's episode and take some notes and then come back and join us where we're at today. All right. So before we dive in, I just want to remind you all that we will be sharing our weekly sewing confession at the end of this episode. So stay tuned for that. And if you have a confession that you would like for us to talk about or mention on our episode, just use the link in the description to submit your anonymous sewing confession. There's no confession too big or too small, and they're always anonymous. We won't know who you are, and we'd like to keep it that way. All right, so let's start in. We're going to just pick up where we left off. Okay. So we're going to start with collaborating with others. Yes. So collaborating with a fellow sewing influencer or creator that relates to your niche that we talked about before. You can introduce you to new audiences, provide a little more diversity to your content for your viewers. So Ashley, do you have something you want to like elaborate on with like what it means to collaborate or examples that you've done that?
Yeah. You know, collaborating within a lot of social media platforms is just like coming together with your friends and then like bouncing off of each other. I found over the years that YouTube didn't value that in the beginning, but now I see that people are taking over each other's channels. Like I'll post my video on your channel and vice versa. And then those people will come and subscribe to mine and, you know, again, vice versa. But, I think that over the years, we didn't value it as much. And now it's like that is a driving force of being able to get your name out there is to collaborate with others and make friends. It was almost like a dog eat dog world like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I'm going to be better than the next person. But now it's like we could be better together.
Yeah.
We can build something together. Mm-hmm. And I really like how things are finally evolving to that point because I'm not going to lie. I had approached many people over the years and I got nothing from them. Mm-hmm. Like they would just completely ghost me or ignore me. And I'm just like, it was very discouraging. And so I didn't do it. I've only done a small handful because, but that's another thing is that you can't be discouraged if you do approach somebody to collaborate with them because they might not be in that point in their YouTube journey where they're ready to do that. And you might be. So you just keep approaching people until you find somebody, you know? So
when you collaborate with someone, you talked about like kind of sharing content on each other's channels. But I think another fun way that you can collaborate is by going live together. And I know one of the things that we didn't really get to dive into last time that we wanted to talk about was live streaming. There's a lot of questions about that. What does that look like? Is there a criteria that you have to meet on Instagram before you can live stream?
Yes, but I can't recall at this moment because I've don't had you, all of the abilities.
Don't you have to have
at least 1,000 subscribers? Yeah, I think so. That's what it is on TikTok for sure. I know that.
Yeah, I feel like you have to meet a criteria before you can go live. But
yes, you do.
I don't know off the top of my head what that is. And I know that it changes. So if it's something that you're interested in and you're starting your YouTube channel, investigate that.
Mm-hmm.
find out so you can set that as a goal. It's like, okay, if I want to start doing lives on YouTube, I need to get to this goal. Mm-hmm. It may not even be that you have to be monetized yet. I don't know, but I have a feeling it might be after that. I'm not sure.
They make these types of qualifications because they want to prevent people from just creating a YouTube channel and then live streaming something horrendous. You know, like yes. This is a safety procedure that YouTube has put in place. Sense. Yeah, for sure. But it really doesn't take long to get to these benefits in your channel. Yeah. You just kind of.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think starting in a YouTube channel, the first thing you want to do is go live anyway. So it's like, let's jump in.
Might be itching to get there, but.
that's a lot. Kudos. But like, at least you know you have something to strive for, right? Mm-hmm, so, so collaborating with others and doing live streams or live streaming over on someone else's channel. And one of those examples could be like what you and I are going to be doing with Amy and the Copper Creek Patterns is doing live streams over on her YouTube channel for our patterns, to, you know, do sew-alongs and things like that. You can do sew-alongs with friends. You could invite people to collaborate in other ways though. So maybe you have a brand or a product that you want to feature and you're collaborating with the brand. So maybe the collaboration is you still making the video, but you're featuring their product and calling it out and maybe putting an affiliate link in the description or they gave you a discount code to offer your subscribers or your followers. And so again, that's another way that you can collaborate because it just is going to give you additional exposure with partnering with brands or other sewists or other crafters or things like that. So I think it could be really fun and a great way to grow yourself in an organic way, targeting the audience that you really want to have.
Yeah. I started doing live streams last week, which sounds like, oh, wow. No, like I have done some over the years, but I'm going to be more consistent now. So, we're carving out time every Wednesday to make a project just for my own mental health. I want to just make something. So last week we made the Steffi bag by Lynn's Handmade. So sometimes I'll use my industrial or my regular or do a garment. Like it's just going to be whatever I feel like making that week and then just kind of hang out with the people.
Now, to clarify, when you do a live stream over on YouTube, when you're done, you can save it to your feed so people can watch the playback. So it's content that can continue to generate organic growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is good because if you go live on like Instagram, it just disappears. Like it's like it never happened, you know?
So. You can save it to your feed.
Instagram, oh, wait, yeah, you're right. Was it TikTok
is the one that disappears.
You're right.
But nobody watches the Instagram live replays because nobody shows up to the lives to begin with because Instagram only pushes your lives to your actual followers. It does not push it to other people that could potentially want to follow you.
No.
And so nobody likes doing lives on Instagram because nobody shows up.
No, there's like six people. And six is more than none, but it's just
but it's just not as interactive quiet. And that's where like where you go live on TikTok, it pushes you out to all of TikTok. And when I first go live, sometimes I have thousands of people on my live because they're like, oh, there's a new live, and it got pushed on their feed and they scrolled and saw it and they stopped for a second and maybe they got engaged. So I feel like with TikTok those lives are way more interactive. And I'm curious to see, I've never done a YouTube live. I want to, let me rephrase that. I've never done a YouTube live on my personal channel. I have done YouTube lives for Singer.
That's right.
And, YouTube and Facebook simultaneously, we have a program called YardStream. And we can stream to multiple platforms at the same time. And then all of the questions and comments feed into the one system.
That's cool.
Which is nice. And we can see how many people are viewing for each platform and whatnot. But it does help moderate, obviously, but we'll have hundreds of people tuning into a live in the middle of the day when we do stuff like that. So I've done the lives, but from a business perspective versus on my own.
Yeah.
I mean, they were on my own too, but you know what I mean? Like,
for you and not for
you. Yeah. So, but maybe that's part of the reason why I haven't done it for me is because I do all this stuff for work.
Well, that's the thing is that you do the projects that your work requires you to do. And so are you having as much fun as you would be if it was just for you?
I mean, they're still fun.
Yeah.
I still enjoy it. I still enjoy the questions and the connectivity. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy doing lives. It's a lot of prep work, though. And I feel like there's more pressure when it's for work.
Right.
To say the right things, do the right things, and have nothing go wrong.
Yes.
That is the pressure I get. But for personally, I used to do Facebook Lives all the time before I got focused on Instagram and started my YouTube. And I love doing them. Like, in the depths of the pandemic, I was on Facebook Live every night crafting.
Really? Oh, I wish I freaking thought. See, I would have like stalked your butt if you were.
I was into that stuff that you were doing too.
So I
was doing epoxy tumblers with my mask on, and I'm like sitting there mixing glitters and epoxy, and I'm pouring it. I was doing all of that.
I would have totally watched you.
In my laundry room.
I'm sure I'm probably scrolled past you before, but.
Oh, you scrolled past me.
But YouTube Live or Facebook Live, I didn't even know people did that. So
it used to be bigger than it is now.
TikTok Live is better.
It was before like Meta was like a thing. Because Meta's not that old.
No.
And so, and I think it was before like Instagram really started to take off, you know, like everybody's like ditching Facebook and just going over there because at the time I think Facebook wasn't really promoting things like they should have been.
Yeah.
And then Instagram was, and then now Instagram's not because Facebook Meta bought them and owned them. And so now everybody's going to TikTok and I'm just like, I can't do another.
Facebook and Meta really.
TikTok lives are probably some of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, I love TikTok.
Laid back and casual and fun. And you and I have done. So that's the other thing is you and I have collaborated on lives. Like on TikTok, I made my first bag on my industrial machine live with you.
Yeah.
We made the Lens Handmade Math Pack. It was so fun. And it was the kit that I had mailed you for your birthday.
And I use it all the anniversary. Time. I love it. It's my favorite.
Yeah. So we both made the same bag with kits that I had gotten. And so anyways, and I sent that to you for our podcast anniversary and we made it up together and that was super fun. So you can collaborate with people for sure. Yeah. You can collaborate with brands. You can collaborate with pattern companies. You know, you just have to reach out and ask.
Well, I mean, the first full year of this podcast was literally just collaborating, which goes to show you that like people are into it now.
Yeah.
Because I honestly, like when we first started the podcast and you were like, you know, you could ask people to be guests on our show. Like I was so like, who's going to do that? And the fact that like so many of, oh my goodness. I was just like, wow, okay, wait a minute.
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah, like I just
so always love to talk about sewing.
I'm telling you though, like I came from a world from YouTube where like
we
didn't talk to each other. We didn't like nobody. I would send messages.
That community's changing because people who are finding that community off of YouTube through other platforms like Instagram and TikTok, and then they're finding that support is trickling over. And being more collaborative and community-based over on YouTube. But I will say this, to your point where like sometimes you ask people and they ghost you or they say no or whatever, I couldn't tell you how many people I've reached out to be guests on this podcast that have said no or ghosted us.
See, I like to see the ones read. Yes.
And that's okay. If it's not for them, it's not for them. And that's fine. It happens. You gotta build a little bit of a thick skin.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Big time.
You can't take it personal. And you don't know what's going on the other end of someone's life. And maybe a response would be nice, but if there's none, then move on and find the next one who will respond. And that's all you got to do. But, you know, never say never. So I think collaborating is a huge thing. We could talk about collaborating all day, but we also want to kind of, and we kind of mentioned it a little bit, is utilizing social media by sharing snippets and updates on other social media platforms like Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, mm-hmm. TikTok to drive traffic to your YouTube channel. So just because you post something on YouTube and it may get some traction, because YouTube can do a decent job of putting it out there to other audiences on their channel. And we'll talk about ways to help that happen. But you kind of have to put on your marketing hat and promote yourself, promote your content in other platforms.
Yeah. There's this one YouTube channel that I watch, and I only watched him on TikTok for a long time until I realized that it was just little snippets from his full length videos on YouTube. But that channel, which now has 8 million subscribers, the main traffic was from TikTok, from putting up those little snippets of his videos. Hmm. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, TikTok did that. Like, I'm sorry.
You know, it's funny you say that, because there is a podcast called Tony and Ryan Podcast. They're mm-hmm. an Australian duo. They are some of the funniest.
Love them. They're people. So cute.
Mm-hmm. Freaking love them. And I got introduced to them on Instagram because they post reels, which are snippets from their podcast episodes. Mm-hmm. And they have like a short episode every day, Monday through Friday. This is their full-time gig. They come from radio. So this is what they do. Mm-hmm. And so they post these little snippets, and they're so funny. I share them with you all the time.
Yes, I love
them.
They're
funny, sometimes inappropriate, always hilarious. And just make me laugh every single time. Like, laugh out loud. It takes a lot for something on social media to get a verbal external reaction from me, because usually I'm just like, hello, that's funny. But like, literally have been in tears over these two from laughing so hard. And I'm like, I've been watching their reels for like, I don't know, a year or more. And I follow both of them on Instagram. And I finally was like, I should probably just go listen to their whole podcast. Yeah.
Like, why?
And so now every morning, Monday through Friday, I start my day by listening to their 30 to 45 minute little podcast. And I get like the whole big picture and not just the little snippets. And it's even better. Yeah. And so that's how I start my day during the week. Fun. And when I go to work and I'm commuting, it's like my little commute to work. It's so nice.
You wouldn't have found them, right? If you hadn't seen those little snippets.
I found them because of finding their reels on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have not watched or listened to Tony and Ryan podcast, I'm officially a tarper. I'm in their Facebook group. I almost went to meet them when they came to the US and did a tour, but it was at 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning in downtown Nashville, and nobody wanted to go with me, and I didn't want to go alone.
I would have.
I should have. I'm so bummed.
And they're far, so like, it's not like they're going to be passing through all the time.
No, I know. I feel like it was a missed opportunity, but I just have never been one to like go meet famous people or like people of influence or anything. But really wish I also kind of wish it hadn't been at 8 o'clock in the morning downtown. But that's fine. That was what their schedule allowed. I just didn't go. And I'm
they're
kind
also
of
on a different time zone, so 8 o'clock was probably like 8 o'clock at night for them.
Yeah, I know. They're probably in a different time zone. But anyways, I say all of that to say
mm-hmm.
that you have to utilize other social platforms to promote whatever you're doing.
For sure.
If you're like, I want to build a YouTube channel, great. Mm-hmm. But these little clips or snippets from those YouTube videos should live elsewhere as little teasers to get people to click on your link to your full YouTube video to see the whole project or get mm-hmm. all the information or learn all the tea. Mm-hmm. And so it's really beneneficial.
Yeah. You're telling me.
To do so. It does take some time to clip those and do those things, but it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And highly recommend it. Now, you mentioned Pinterest on here.
Yeah.
I feel like Pinterest is one of those like hidden gems that I haven't dove into, but I know it exists, but I keep ignoring it, but I really shouldn't. And I really only use it for my cooking recipes.
Mm-hmm.
So do you utilize Pinterest?
So that was my main driving force was Pinterest, because Pinterest was huge. I feel like it's not as huge now, and they're trying to evolve the platform by adding more videos and things. So you'll find like full-length tutorials on Pinterest, but I have like, I think over 10,000 followers on Pinterest. I don't know how that happened.
Wow.
But every time I did any YouTube video, I would pin the video, I would make a blog post, and then pin the blog post, and then pin the photos, and just pin everything, just to drive traffic from Pinterest to my YouTube channel. YouTube, like Pinterest, is still viable, but I don't know the level of. I think everybody's just living over on TikTok and Instagram these days. Like,
I feel like we feel that way because we do, but I think there's still a lot that goes on over on Pinterest
for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I know I go there for inspiration for when I need to create a new project for work and I'm trying to get creative, and I'll go over there and scroll and I'll see those little video clips and I'm like, oh
yeah, I actually I had 15
and I click on them and I end up on someone's YouTube and here we go. I mean, it works.
It does, but I don't know. It's just, it feels different now.
It's yeah, I can see that.
But I think it's just like Pinterest is now Instagram. Like you can sit there and you can, that's, scroll. I think that's what I'm doing now is I'm using Instagram as my Pinterest or TikTok. Sorry, Pinterest.
But I feel like Pinterest is more searchable for things.
Yeah. I was getting 1 million monthly views on my Pinterest and now I get 439,000. So that's how it's gone down half.
Over half.
Yeah.
But is that, are you changing how frequently you're putting stuff on Pinterest though?
Yeah, but it was like that when I just didn't put anything up there. Like that, it was just always hung out at like a million, whatever it's called, impressions.
Yeah.
So the
I feel like I need to look into Pinterest. I think for me though, I have like a personal Pinterest account.
Yeah.
I've never quite figured out how to set up a business Pinterest account for like, and I know how to save pins all day to my boards. Do not know how to add a pin.
It's easy.
It's so confusing to me.
Yeah.
It's not intuitive.
It's called a business hub. It's just basically like you put in your the URL and then it'll actually retrieve the photo and then you choose the photo or the video and then you can put in your description so you can optimize your SEO with all that stuff and your keywords and everything so that pin is easier to find. Because if you just pinned it like a normal pin, then it's not going to be as easily searchable. But if you physically make a pin, like manually, then you can make it more searchable. Yeah, I know. But yeah, you need to switch it over to a business thing, and then you get to be in the business hub. And
I don't even know how many Pinterest followers I have on my personal Pinterest. I mean, I have pins dating back to like the inception of Pinterest. And this photo of me is from 10 years ago.
Yeah, I've had it. I have my personal Pinterest. The photo is of Bianca when she was 8 months old.
I don't even know how to look to see how many people follow me. This is how bad I am at it. Like, I can't even, I don't even know.
But you know, something else that you can do if you're an affiliate, right? Is you can create pins with your affiliate link for other people's companies so that your pins drive people to your affiliates on Pinterest. They see something from a pattern company, like, oh, that's cute. They click on that pin and it takes you to Bethany's affiliate link. And then they buy the pattern. Yep.
You're none the wiser.
Yep.
That's interesting.
You're helping the company, but you're really just helping yourself because
both. It's a win-win.
It is. Win-win-win.
So you mentioned something called SEO optimization. And for those who don't know, that means search engine optimization, SEO. Mm-hmm. So it's basically where you're tagging, like she said, keywords and things like that. and utilizing those keywords to be searchable on any sort of browser platform so that when someone searches those keywords, whatever you have created, whether it's a YouTube video, a Pinterest post, or whatever, a blog post, that any of that is searchable and pops up in someone's Google search or, you know, browser search. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk a little bit about SEO, utilizing or relevant keywords specifically to YouTube. This was something that you were like, oh, it's just like SEO is just using keywords on YouTube. And I'm like, I didn't even know that there were keywords on YouTube when we first met. And you had to teach me that. And you also taught me how to save them so that I don't have to put them in every time, because I was mm-hmm. also doing that. So I'm telling you, some of these things that you may have mastered in Thinker Basic, Ashley, in your tenure with YouTube, didn't even know to do. So let's talk a little bit about these keywords, how important they are, and also beyond keywords, tags, descriptions, video titles. I think video titles are a big one too.
Yeah. So keywords are just words that best describe your video. So there's nothing special about it. It's just like if you did a video on foundation paper piecing, you're going to type in the keywords foundation paper piecing, because that's
three separate keywords
are most likely going to be typing in. You can make it a string of words, or you can make it each individual word. But those keywords are going to be in a spot where it says add your keywords, and you can type them in with a little comma in between. But then it also goes down to your description. The more you describe your video, the better it will sense those words as well. So you really want to have a really good description. Like YouTube has now gone to the point where they want you to write a story in the description, you know, like about it. And then you want to have your really good keywords. You can look up different types of things, like TubeBuddy is a service that I use to help me to find.
As in YouTube, like Tube?
TubeBuddy.
Okay.
So you can actually like type in what your video is, and then it'll say like, these are the most searched keywords, so that you can have people find your video the most, you know?
Okay.
It's just your title, of course, is important. It needs to be clear, concise, and people know exactly what the video is about. So you can actually like use TubeBuddy again to optimize your title so that it is the best, and the, you know, it's not just a bunch of words. It's right. clear and to the point. And then your thumbnail. Thumbnails are very important because they're the thing that will catch the person's eye. The first thing they see is the thumbnail and not necessarily the words that are on it or even the title of the video.
And the thumbnail, for those who don't know, is the cover photo for your video.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have learned a lot about thumbnails since working with Singer, and we've tested different things to see like what works best for their platform. And so having an image of the project, a clear image of the project, was really important.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be at least half of the thumbnail, if not three-fourths. And then the text for the title of the video would be like on one side. And it was not messy. It was not a bunch of flashy stuff, not a bunch of craziness. It was like very simple and clear, because they're tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's too much going on, people are going to be like, what is this about? You know, and if it's your face every time, but not the project, they're going to think it's the same video every time, because they're not reading the text that it's a different project.
Right.
So I really recommend if you can put the project in it, or the project with you, or maybe you're the smaller little bubble, but the project's the big focus of if that's what you're teaching.
Yeah. And if that's you are appearing in the video, mm-hmm. I think it's a value to put your face in the thumbnail now.
Yeah. But like a small little, like, you know, mm-hmm. I think if they're coming to you to learn to make a bag, that bag should be the big focal point image. And then, you know, sew along with Ashley and Ashley's face, in a little bubble and, you know, make this bag or whatever. So I think, but the bag is what's going to make them stop and go, I want to learn how to make that bag.
Yeah. Like if people are coming to your video because you are the star of the show and you're the one who makes them laugh, then, you know, you can take up more space. But I would say like a quarter of your thumbnail could be yours. And I've seen people where they like take several different photos of themselves doing different facial expressions and, you know, all the things. And then they use that like a different one for each photo just so that it's not always the same one.
Yeah.
So they might scroll through and just like she said, you kind of focus on that face. Mm-hmm. And if it's always the same, then you kind of, oh, I've seen it before or something like that. Right.
Yeah. The other thing is to create eye-catching thumbnails, the platform that I use is Canva. There's so many templates. It's so easy. And then you can save it. And so you can just update that thumbnail. So for the next project, the next video, you know, so that you have like, because one thing we found, at least with Singer, is like consistency. It just makes it very aesthetic when someone's looking at your whole channel. And then when they see any sort of thumbnail that has that aesthetic, even if the pictures change because of the project, they know that it's like becomes recognizable as like, oh, that's the next Singer video. I want to catch that. Or I haven't seen that one, you know? So I'm telling you, Canva, and there's a free version that gives you plenty to work with. I have the pro version and I love it, but I use it a lot and I use it for work. So Canva would be
for sure
a great place to start if you need, and they have templates. It's like you just type in like YouTube thumbnail and it's a template. You can do a blank one or there's lots of templates, but they're set to the size that they need to be for YouTube thumbnails, which takes some of the guesswork out of it. So that they look aesthetically pleasing when you upload them. So we talked about keywords. Now, one thing I did mention and we didn't talk about yet is you can save keywords. So you don't have to put in, like, if you have a channel that's always about sewing and sewing tutorials, or like we have our podcast, so we have some keywords that we leave in there and then we'll add additional keywords based on the topic of the podcast. Right. So those keywords live there and they saved. Now, Ashley, you're the one that taught me how to do that. And it's in Creator Studio. So we mentioned in the last podcast, there's a program called YouTube Creator Studio, and that's kind of like the back end to manage your website. And it takes you a little bit further into that space. And I highly recommend having it in the app on your phone to manage your YouTube channel.
Yeah.
But that's where you can go in and save those keywords, correct?
Yeah. If you're in your channel dashboard, on the left-hand side, there is a little cog that says settings, and in there you can go ahead and add in your currency if you are trying to get monetized, your channel basic info, which would be your keywords, and then you can say like whether or not it's for kids or not, because if it's for kids then you're not going to be able to get monetized.
Is that true?
I don't know how that stuff works these days, but I'm pretty sure.
Now, is this also where you wrong? Is this also the area where you can save a portion of your description?
Yeah. So if you have like your Amazon storefront links in your link tree, you can put all those things in automatically so that you
kind of the stuff that typing that always lives in your description of every video, you can auto populate to show up in your description. So you only have to add the stuff that's relatable to the video that you're posting. So again, it just makes it easier.
Yeah. Especially if you're just going to do it quickly with your phone or something, upload a video and you don't feel like sitting there and typing out all those things. Or, you know, back in the olden days, I would keep all that stuff in like a Google Doc and then I would have to bring it. Yeah, exactly. Every single video. So it was amazing when they finally introduced this. But in this also settings tab, you can create moderators and things for your, you know, and if you have other people who are maybe collaborating into your YouTube channel and giving them special permissions to use it. But yeah, if you do your YouTube live streams, you can put your moderators in there so that you can give them permission to be able to, you know, kick people and all that stuff.
So one of the things I wanted to talk about or mention is timestamps.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that while we're talking about descriptions and setting up your videos and searchability and usability, like timestamps is something I didn't know about until recently when you and I were talking about it and how to do it. And I didn't realize that me typing out those key points in my tutorial, in my description, would actually implement timestamps in my video. So people who are following along in a tutorial and they need to find a certain part, that they can just find it. So explain the timestamps, the importance of it, and the value that they add.
Hmm. Timestamps are something that essentially creates chapters in your YouTube video. So let's say like you have 15 steps in your sewing tutorial and you want to chop those up. You don't want to make 15 different videos for that one tutorial. So you can create a mark in the timeline of your video so that if somebody, let's say, comes back to that video because they're making that project, they're like, I only need to see how to put the zipper in. They can just click it. It'll, you know, you use your cursor and you'll see the title. It'll be like, Ashley's putting the zipper in. You can click on that time and then it takes you right to that spot in the video. Now, Bethany hasn't done that.
I have. Means,
how many videos have you done them all?
No. I have not gone back and done them all. Are you kidding me?
So you need to go back because you know, like you go to a website and there's a recipe and it says the jump to recipe button.
That's the only way I'll use that recipe.
Exactly. If that's not there, people will be like, I'm not even going to do it. Right. And they just, so some people are the same way with chapters. If they can't find what they're looking for, they're just like, I get it.
And I think what I would probably do is start with my more popular videos.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
Like, you know, the hand knit blanket tutorial that's got 230,000 views on YouTube. And like, that would be a good one to start with. And my jelly roll rug, I think that one really could benefit from it because it's a longer tutorial. I think the longer the tutorial and the more steps there are, the more important it is to have. I did it with recently with my crochet border blanket tutorial that I did. And that was good. That was pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty easy. It's just, you just have to type in the times and then dash, and then you put what that chapter is called.
Yeah, and you type it into the description. So you can kind of put it at the bottom of the description.
Yeah.
And then it auto-populates into the video slider for the time. So, which is cool. And I was like, I felt like it was supposed to be harder than it was. And I was like, I don't think I don't know how to do this. And then you were like, you just type it in. I was like, what do you mean I just type it
in?
I'm like,
it's kind of silly the way it goes. TubeBuddy has a portion that makes it easy. And then you get to like scroll and then click. And then it says add. And then you like type it in. Like there are services out there that'll help make those things easier. But
if you're editing the video, as you're editing it and you're watching it back for your final review, just make notes of those times as you're changing to the next step that you want to call out. And you don't have to do every single step. It could be a couple steps together if they are short, you know, but like, I mean, it really is helpful because if someone's watching and sewing along or making along with you, and then they have to pause and go do something else, and then they come back later or another day and that video has refreshed and they have to figure out where they stopped. It's nice to have those chapters so they can go, they can jump right to the part that they left off with. And so it does make a tutorial based content on YouTube much more enjoyable. I enjoy that feature. I just didn't know how to get it on my videos until Ashley told me. And I was like, well, that was easy.
Well, it sounds like something that like you need to, like kind of like live streams, like, when you get a certain amount of followers, then you're able to get this special thing. It's like,
it's no, you can do this on your very first video. Good to know.
It's pretty neat.
Good to know. All right. So we talked about, you know, utilizing social media, SEO optimization, eye catching thumbnails, timestamps, but at the end of the day, none of this is really beneficial if you don't stay consistent. Consistency is key. And I'm the last one to preach on that.
Yeah, the thing about consistency is YouTube has an algorithm, mm-hmm. and you kind of insert yourself into the algorithm. And as you stay consistent, you go up into this algorithm to be able to show up on people's recommended pages and stuff. And that's how people find you, is you show up on recommended, you know, like, oh, because you watch this video, you might like this video, right? And mm-hmm. you want to be this video. Mm-hmm. But once you get into that algorithm, you know, your videos keep growing. If you drop off, like if you stop posting every Wednesday at 2 p.m., then YouTube's like, whatever time. She doesn't care anymore. And then you go down. And then you need to build it's kind of like a credit score. You need to build it back up again. God. Yeah, I know. So really, like, it's like, I don't want to say this. It's like a birth control pill. You need to do it at the same time every time so that you can stay in the same, you know. It's true. It really is.
That analogy, but that is solid.
You all understand though, right? You
instantly get the picture.
Fine. Yeah, exactly.
Instantly, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I may be putting this on my calendar as birth control instead of make YouTube video. Because then it seems even more urgent.
It's right. Like, if you don't put out that video, you could end up with a baby.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. So that's hilarious. So staying consistent is important. And I mean, when you start utilizing YouTube more and more, there's just like any of our social platforms, there's analytics that'll mm-hmm. show you your demographic of audience, your age, your where they're watching from, the times that they're online. So you can kind of gauge like when to post your new content. Okay. If they're online every Sunday at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, your time zone, then that's when I need to be posting my new video of the week. How often, Ashley, would you say that someone who is going to take building a YouTube channel very seriously with the intention of growing and monetizing themselves, how often should they be posting a new video, full-length video, not shorts, full-length video on YouTube?
At least once a week.
Consistently.
Yeah, at least once a week, if not more, of course. But,
and then shorts are those added bonuses of like creating like snippets from the video mm-hmm. that you posted that you could create little snippets from to make shorts and post three of those in a week.
Yeah, at least one a day is what I uh-huh. would recommend with shorts.
Really?
Yeah. If you are really serious. And YouTube is very profitable.
Yeah.
You can quit your job on YouTube. Yeah. So,
like, but at the same time, and let's be realistic, if you work full time,
mm-hmm.
like I do,
mm-hmm.
it's going to require a lot of your time outside of work
mm-hmm.
to get to the point where it's really making a financial impact. And it doesn't happen overnight. I think it took me a year to get monetized.
Yeah.
Of course, I wasn't doing all the right things. I didn't have a podcast like us telling you what to do. So you're welcome. You'll probably get there way faster than I did. But consistency is a big part of it. And make sure you're having fun with it.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Once it turns into work, then.
Don't take it so seriously. Don't overanalyze it. Don't critique it to the point that you just get scared to post it. Like, just have fun with it. You got to start somewhere. And we did talk about that last week. Now, the last thing I said, we monitor analytics. This is where you really want to make sure that you're making sure that you're getting the audience that you want and that you're tailoring the content to the audience that you're obtaining. And if it's not the audience that you want, you might want to reconsider your keywords or your SEO things that we were talking about. And the last thing that we didn't mention, and this is something I don't do because I find it hard to find on YouTube.
Mm.
There is a place where you can just do a stagnant post on YouTube.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about that, actually. The community tab.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck is the community tab? I never look at anybody else's community tabs.
You just don't realize it because it comes up on
help me understand and help us all understand community tabs and tell me why I need to start paying attention to it.
When you're on someone's YouTube, on their YouTube channel, they'll have tabs where you can click on, you know, if you want to see their live streams, you want to see whatever, whatever. And there is the communities tab. And that's where we can like literally put full on posts, messages.
It's a post, like a steel post that you would put on Instagram or Facebook.
Photos. Yeah. Photos and videos and links to other videos. But those things all pop
announcements.
Up. Yep. Those things pop up in people's subscription feed. You don't realize that you're seeing it. Like if I'm like, hey, did you check out this week's video? Then I put a link to my video and it pops up and it looks like it's me posting a new video, but it was really just me saying like, hey, did you watch this? I'm just showing it to you again.
I've also seen where some channels where they post in that and they post like polls that you can vote.
Yeah, interaction, way to like
interact with things. And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I feel like there's a lot more to YouTube than just posting tutorials.
For sure. Yeah. You can really get, you can't get as close to your people. Like they can't DM you on YouTube. And that's where you would have your, you know, your Instagram or your Facebook where you could tell your people, like, if you want to actually contact me, you know, go to these channels. But you can still get close to your people.
Well, and you find the people that comment on your videos consistently. Those you that's the other thing we didn't talk about. People that comment on your videos, you need to go like their comment, thumbs up their comment, reply to their comment. Even if they're just saying something nice, like, thank you, I appreciate the feedback. I got so many great feedback comments on my tutorial for my chunky hand knit blanket that some of the best ones that were just really like, wow, you can pin those to the top. So when someone's new to your video and they see that comment at the top, they're like, oh, I definitely want to watch this. And because so many people, not only do I have the views to back it, I have all these comments, but this comment that she pinned really states like the overall feeling of all the majority of the comments that I got, which I don't think I got a bad one. And so I feel like you can pin comments. You definitely need to respond to them no matter what. That's so important.
It is.
That's where you get that engagement. And they love it because they're not used to getting that kind of engagement on YouTube. So when the creator of a video that they really liked responds and says, thank you for this positive feedback, it means the world to me. Like, I appreciate you sharing my video. That's awesome. I appreciate you, you know, making these as your gift. And then I'll, as gifts for Christmas. And I'm like, please tag me over on Instagram or Facebook when you make it. I'd love to see your finished project. Like, I want to see what they're making. And so I really, it's another way to kind of build that rapport with them without really having that DM experience through YouTube. So definitely reply.
I utilize my comment section also to add links to things. So if I did a blog post, I'll put that in the top comment and I pin my comment. Because some people don't want to look at the description.
No, they don't.
And then they will come across it in the comments. So it's like, it's what it is, what it is. But
yeah,
I think people sometimes like, go to the comments for the drama. Is anyone saying anything bad?
But the
then, yeah. But then you put the link and they're like, oh, there it is. And then they click on it.
I will say the description space on YouTube, you kind of have to know where to click to find it.
Yeah.
Because it's like see more and it's just a sliver of a space where they show like a sentence or two. And you have to hit see more to see the entire description with all the links. And sometimes it's just like on Etsy. People don't read those. They don't click on those. They don't read the fine print. So I think the last thing we kind of want to wrap up with and leave you guys with is how important it is to stay authentic. If you want organic growth with the audience that you're targeting, and you want it to be sustainable, besides doing these other things that we talked about to set yourself up for success, it doesn't work if you're not being yourself. If you stutter half the time, who cares? Just be your, like, people want to see you being real. They want to see you being authentic. They want to feel like you're relatable, that they can see themselves making what you're making because they can see themselves in you.
Yeah, exactly. That's what brings us together the most, is just mm-hmm. feeling like a human connection with that yeah. person. Like, oh my God, look at her craft room. It's so messy. That's so me, right? And then it's like, okay, if she can do that and she doesn't care, then
yeah.
Like,
when it's so perfect, it makes it seem like, and your video is so perfect and your space is so perfect, it does seem like it's unattainable.
Yeah.
It's to someone who isn't like this. Yeah. Like, it's not relatable. And I love looking at the aesthetically pleasing
sure.
crafting faces and videos. And I try to keep mine, like, I try to use a white space just because the video does show, the content shows up better. But at the end of the day, like, if I mess up, I'm like, well, don't do that. And if you do, this is how you fix it. Like, I just throw it in there.
Exactly.
It's part of the experience. If I mess up and show them that, it gives them permission to mess up and not quit.
Right. Cause it's like, wow, Bethany is so good. She did it totally perfect. And I keep screwing up. So there must be something wrong with me. Why do I bother sewing? And it's like, we screw up. But a lot of people cut that stuff out because they don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
Leave it in.
And I think, I'm not saying you have to show every mess up, but I think from time to time, or like, hey, if you run into this hiccup, this is what I did. Like, troubleshoot, because it may have gone perfectly for you that time, but maybe next time it doesn't. And you can be like, well, I did have this little oopsie daisy happen, and this is how I overcame it and whatever. But I think it's important to stay authentic. I think it's important to write out what your goals are when starting a YouTube channel, so that when you are getting into the thick of it, you can be reminded of why I'm doing this, why I'm working so hard on this. And I think the last bit I want to leave you guys with is, don't look at the numbers every single day, especially or even every single week. If that becomes your hyper focus, and this applies to any social media channel, when your focus is on how many subscribers, how many views, how many likes, how many follows, and not
working on the content,
like working on the next content, you're going to get discouraged and quit.
Yeah. Tell me about it. If only you would have told me that 10 years ago.
If that is your focus, you're not going to grow like you want to, because you're focusing on the negative or or the distraction. And you just have to keep putting content out there.
It's just like, keep going to the gym, you know, stop looking at the scale. Same thing.
Yeah. You're on point with the analogies today. I'm impressed. Who is this, Ashley?
I don't know.
This is your topic. So I think that
I think so. My topic.
Guys, I hope this has helped you all find some courage to start a YouTube channel. There's always room for more. Just because someone else is doing sewing content doesn't mean that you can't. We talked about that last week. And at the end of the day, you got to have fun with it. All right. So to wrap up this week's podcast and our sewing confession of the week. My confession, man, I'm thrown and I don't know what to do. So this week's sewing confession is, sometimes before I go to bed, I'll go and sit in my sewing room and admire the progress I made on a project, or to just sit with my sewing machine.
Aww.
Not making anything, cleaning up anything, just sitting in her happy space. And I have to say, I do that often. This is a happy confession. I wanted to share a happy one this week.
Yeah.
I kind of shared a doozy last week. And so I just wanted to end this podcast on a positive note. And I thought that was really sweet. And I don't know who this person is, but I want you to know that you're not alone.
No.
I would say a lot of us do that.
I think the energy in our sewing space is different than the rest of the house. And that's why we just want to be in it.
It's a creative space, whether it's messy or not, or a work in progress, or a corner in the dining room. It doesn't matter. It's a space where you get to disconnect and do something that makes you happy. And so I go in there and just sit and eat my lunch at my my cutting table. And people are like, Brock's like, why are you eating in here? And I'm like, because it's just a happy space. And I really like all the colors that are in here and my pretty fabric on the wall that I'll probably never make into anything.
You know, like, I could sit in Bethany's craft room and just look around.
Yeah.
Everywhere you look. You know what I mean?
Like, you can see something new.
Yeah.
Every single time. That's how much crap there's in there.
It's very neatly organized, though. It's very nice.
Most of the time, yeah, everything has a place, but that changes from time to time. Yeah. So I'm so glad that you shared this. And I feel like you were a little hesitant to admit this, but I'm glad that you did, because I do this and I don't even think I realize I'm doing it. It's just like,
yeah, wow.
In a happy space.
Out of all the places in your house.
Right. If you have a sewing confession that you want to share, good, the bad, the ugly, we want to hear it. They're anonymous. There's a link in our description to be able to go to our website and submit your anonymous sewing confession. It uploads to our website and we don't even know who it came from. So we share one every week as long as we're getting them. And we've got quite a few. So we're excited to keep sharing these with you all. And until next week, happy sewing.
Bye.
Bye.